And welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout. Today is Thursday, June 4th. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll talk with John Neary about the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center and new changes over there. We'll talk with Beth Weigel, here to highlight all the activities at the Juno Public Library System. We'll talk with Rick Clare and Michael Hunter and Colleen Goldrich about First Friday at Annie Kale's. And we'll hear about all the arts happenings in town with Arts Up. We've got Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Today is the fourth part in our week-long series looking at rural sanitation in Alaska. What if you lived in a cold climate and did not have piped water and sewer, and there was little to no government help? What types of low-cost systems are out there? As KMBA's Jocelyn Estes reports, experts are seeking answers to rural sanitation issues in Alaska.
Keeping it simple is not necessarily the solution when haul systems, where people pay by the gallon to get water delivered and waste picked up, leave them using as little water as possible, far below the 15 gallons a day needed for frequent hand washing. Brian Lefferts is Environmental Health and Engineering Director at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation in Bethel.
We recognize that there are some places that just the geology, the area, won't allow for piped water and sewer to the home. But that the small haul system, the way it is, just currently isn't working. And so there's a push to do research and development in that area to try to find a solution for those homes.
Some of that push is coming from the state, which is putting up money for innovative solutions through the Alaska Water and Sewer Challenge. Bill Griffith is the Alaska Village Safe Water Facilities Manager.
We've established some performance targets that include things like sufficient water for health, affordable operation, feasible capital cost, constructability, long-term operability. We've also got some evaluation criteria like the requirement to go out and gather user input from communities. Also, we're looking for some innovative approaches to design.
Recycled water is part of some of the designs people are creating. Another popular idea is mini water and sewage treatment plants installed at each home. Standalone systems for several homes in Kivalina are the goal of an Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium project begun a few years ago. Project manager John Warren says this summer they'll install equipment that funnels filtered rainwater into a tank in the house and plumbing fixtures that conserve water. Kivalina is located on a barrier island that's being eroded away by the sea, so the village needs to relocate. Warren says the equipment they're providing is portable, giving the water treatment system as an example.
They could actually take it with them to fish camp. It has an electric pump for ease of use, or it has a hand pump if there is no electricity.
As for sewage, ANTHC plans call for the separation of liquids and solids and treatment of the solids to reduce the number of trips needed for disposal. Lefferts says he's optimistic the Alaska Water and Sewer Challenge will result in new options, but he hopes those don't become the only choice for all rural communities.
It's important, though, to note that while there are some areas that we don't know how to serve those homes, there are still a number of homes that are unserved that could easily be served with traditional pipes and gravity sewer mains. And we know that that system works and can be cost-effective. And we strongly encourage that we continue to fund construction projects to serve those homes using traditional water and sewer construction methods.
A few Alaska Water and Sewer Challenge teams will be funded to further develop their projects into 2018, but innovative alternatives are just one part of what's lying ahead. Next time, we'll find out more about what the future holds. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout. It's 6 minutes past the hour. And my first guest in the studio today is John Neary, the director of Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Thank you so much for joining me in the studio.
Thanks for letting me be here, Shona.
Yeah. So there's some new things happening out at the glacier that at the Visitor Center mm-hmm. and in the glacier in general that people should know about.
There are. I mean, the big story of the day seems to be fees. You know, and we did make a decision recently. The regional forester decided that the proposal that we talked about this winter in December and January is now a decision, no longer a proposal. And what that means to a lot of folks in Juneau is, especially those who are accustomed to walking, say, out to the bear viewing platforms all summer to see bears, that will now, starting next May, expect them to have an annual pass or a daily pass to do so.
So it's actually not going to be enforced this summer, so people can get their bear viewing looking out, you know.
Right. Yeah, so we're going to start next May 1, and it's going to go through September 30 each year. Winters will still be the same as they've always been. You could still come out to fireside chats for free and linger and eat Oreo cookies and have hot cocoa, right? All that's still going to happen. And indeed, there's still quite a few places you can come around the visitor center area for free if you really don't want to pay any fees. You could still walk the Nugget Falls Trail. You could still drive down the road and park your car and walk your dog. You can ride your bike. You only pay the fees if you come and use the bus shelter, the covered pavilion, the Steep Creek Trail and platforms, the Photo Point Trail, the bus shelter, I might have said that already, and the visitor center itself.
And so the annual pass, or is it annual pass or seasonal summer pass?
Yeah, in truth, it is more of a seasonal pass, right, because the pass need goes away on October 1, and that would be $15. So you and a guest for $15 if you buy it in May or June. If you wait until, say, July 16, because you're mostly there to see bears and they're not so much out earlier, then the price drops to $10. And if you're, like a lot of my friends are these days, 62 years or older, then you're probably most interested in the Senior Access Pass, because for $10 you get a lifetime of free visits to any park or forest nationwide, plus three guests, so four total people. For $10 for a lifetime.
I can't wait to hit 62 for that actual pass.
Me too.
Great. So as far as getting the pass, and where can they pick that up?
At the Visitor Center at the Alaska Geographic Bookstore. So in the Visitor Center, out at what we call the Tiny Bookstore, which is out in the parking lot near the pavilion. In the future, we're going to have probably vending machine, credit card swipe sort of thing, somewhere out maybe at the Steep Creek Trailhead. We hope to also have online passes available someday.
And will it be kind of like the Eagle Crest Pass where you have a lanyard around your neck and that's kind of how it's enforced?
I doubt it.
Okay.
No, because you see, we're interpreters. We're not law enforcement officers. There is no intention to check everybody that comes out there like there is at Eagle Crest, right? Because you have to get on the lift. And we don't have a point like the lift. We don't really want one. There's some important reasons for that. One is we have 500,000 people. And most of them are coming just for a couple of hours or even just an hour, right? And most of them have already paid through their tour operator. So our enforcement is almost instantaneously better than any other enforcement there could be, because those operators are all accountable for those numbers of people they deliver. And so there's a good built-in enforcement and tracking system there. Furthermore, for those who aren't coming with a tour operator, my neighbors, your friends, yourself, those folks are going to come and just use the facilities the way they want, and we're probably not ever even going to ask to see your pass unless you do something wrong. And so, you know, the equivalent is you probably didn't show your driver's license to any law enforcement officers on your way to work today, did you? No, we can't enforce every driver on the road, even though state law requires you have the license. But they're probably only going to stop you if you're a mad driver or doing 90 miles an hour, and that would be what we're facing out at the visitor center.
So for a lot of local people, it will be an honor system that you should get this pass because you need it to go there.
I wouldn't go so far as honor system, but what I would say is enforcement will be random, it'll be intermittent, and it'll be as needed.
Right.
And for the most part, the need is already mostly met, unless somebody is doing something out of line, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you were mentioning before we came on air that, you know, this pass, although like a driver's license, not something that people are going to see every day, what will happen is that the money used, collected from these passes, will be used for something that is highly useful for our community.
Yeah, that's the exciting part for me, because I know there's worry about fees. Who doesn't worry when new fees are instituted? It's just sort of our nature. But I think in this case, it's going to be a cool result. What we hope to do is really remake the visitor center into a sustainability center. What I mean by that is right now, our model is not very sustainable. We have a lot of oil we burn. We put up that oil and carbon into the atmosphere, and then we wonder why the glacier is retreating. And it's not just sort of the tour buses, even though they're popularly stigmatized. That's not the only cause, right? Climate change is fairly complex. It's the visitor center building pumping out from our oil burners. It's the operations of everything we do as a community. It's the wood burning stuff. It's everything that we do. And so our goal really is to think about the infrastructure in an entirely new way out there. And how might we build a living building that recycles its own water and waste and that is zero net energy and zero waste? And how might we think about our fleet and electrifying our fleet using our great hydropower resource that we already have in Juneau? I learned recently, you know, that AEL&P is 99.97% hydro-driven. That's something which Juneau ought to be really proud of.
I know, right?
And we want to put that to work.
Yeah.
We want to tell that story to the community that our community has already got this resource. We want to put more of it to work. It's carbon-free. It always has been. And let's show it off. And then, you know, for those people that say, oh, that's well and good, you know, the sustainability stuff, I think they're going to really get excited about a few other ideas that have been passing around. For example, what about extending those bear viewing platforms, making more of them, more opportunities to see the salmon and the bears interacting? What about a pie shop? What about the fact that the pie shop existed when the visitor center was built in 1962, but we got rid of it years ago because the place got too crowded? Why not bring it back? Why not put it somewhere where everybody could enjoy it?
I had no idea there was a pie shop.
There was.
You mean like pie, like a slice of pie?
Like pecan pie, for example. The rumor has it was the best in town. Yeah, and so I like pie. I don't know if you like pie, but
who doesn't?
I like pie. And I think there's some Juneau people that, you know, they may not really care much about climate change, but they sure do care about their pie. So I'm hoping they'll come to our planning meetings this fall. I hope they'll give voice to what they think the place ought to be in the next couple of decades and really put our community effort into making it that.
Speaking of those planning meetings, is that something that is open to the public?
Oh, yeah. We not only is it open, but I'll be disappointed if we don't get hordes showing up. We will have pie, after all. But the reality is that we hope this community actively wants to engage in this conversation. Like, what should this place be? How can I get from it what I want personally? Like, I still want to walk my dog or ride my bike or hike the East Glacier Trail. Great. Let's talk about seeing more bears. Let's see about salmon restoration in Steep Creek. Let's talk about all that. And then let's also talk about how it affects the world, this place, with 500,000 visitors from all around the globe. What messages might they take back to Asia and to India about this cool sustainability center they just experienced in front of this retreating glacier?
So you're at the glacier a lot, obviously, and I'm wondering, is it something that just watching the glacier recede, you know, year after year and month after month and nowadays, and is that where the sustainability building idea came from?
It did. You know, I was just waiting in your reception area, and the artist that you'll have in the show a little bit later heard that I was a director of Visitor Center. The first thing they said was, oh, I remember that place 40 years ago when the glacier was a whole lot bigger, and it's really sad, isn't it? That's the comment I get from everybody. It's really sad, isn't it? And the sadness comes from this sense of loss that we have, that this thing is going away. There's this sense of powerlessness, like what can we do about it? You know, and then people unfortunately move towards blaming. There's always someone else to blame for that problem. And my whole hope for us as a community is to move away from blame and solve some real problems on this site.
Yeah. It's a great move and a very smart way, a message, you're right, to give to visitors and also to our own community.
Yes, that's really true, isn't it? It's about all of us rethinking what our role is and what we could do about it, actually.
Yeah. There's also just some amazing things happening at the glacier all the time, you know, and people, like you said, think about fees and go, ah, but at the same time, it's like, what are you paying for? And a lot of times, you know, the first thing that I do when I have guests that come to town, I'm like, hey, I think the bears are out. Let's go.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what kind of activity is going on there right now.
Oh, bears, yeah. So for the last week or so, not so much, kind of mercifully so, because we had quite the Tuesday with Capital City Fire and Rescue falling, you know, rescuing somebody that fell on the trail, and then we had the elevator stuck and people entrapped, and all they needed was a bear to show up in the middle of that crowd, and it would have been mayhem. But the real backstory of, say, Bear 103, which caused the East Glacier Trail to be closed a few weeks back, you might remember that story, and she and her cubs have sort of moved on somewhere, rumored to be further out the road a little bit, not like out the road, but out our road, the Glacier
right.
Spur Road,
yeah.
Just outside of the recreation area. She's known to wander all through Dredge Lakes and such. So we haven't seen her in a few days, but we know she's around because she was out there on Friday with those cubs. And other bears have been a bit scarce, but it's really not surprising considering the minimal snowpack we had and the abundance of foods that would be available to them in the alpine and the subalpine zones right now. Yeah, so there's all kinds of great stuff for them all over the place.
That's right. They don't have to just graze there.
Yeah, right. And 2 years ago, that was the case, actually. I'd point out the contrast. Do you remember when it was my first summer at the glacier, 2013, the snowpack was really deep up high, but it melted quickly when it warmed up dramatically mm-hmm. in April and May down low.
Yeah.
So we had bears all along the Nugget Falls Trail daily, and we're constantly trying to keep the tourists separated from them. It's really quite the opposite right now, and I think it's mostly related to lack of snowpack.
Yeah. So as far as the water level out there has also been quite the Yoko interesting
up.
News.
Yeah, fortunately, our friends at NOAA and UAS gave us a bit of warning about this. Merrill Jensen was out there paddling his kayak by the glacier. I ran to him in the parking lot, and he said, you know, it seems like there's something really going on out there by the glacier. There's this rush of water, and the bergs are floating, and it was pushing me away from it. And then right about the same time, we got notice from UAS that indeed there seemed to be a release from Suicide Basin. And so it wasn't as big as it would get later on for whatever reason. We've seen releases, you know, that are much higher discharge rates that result in the river and cause all those problems with flooding. But there's probably going to be another one, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's plenty of refill time at this point. And the weird thing for the university and NOAA to try to predict is just how much ice is there in the basin, how much of the ice, which is shrinking away, has been replaced by water, and how much of the Mendenhall is shrinking such that it's more easily floated up so that the discharge happens quicker and easier. And so it's quite a dynamic situation, pretty hard to predict. But they're doing their best with sensors, and it's a great team effort.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about and to read about constantly. And it's also, too, something that recreational users of the lake really need to pay attention to.
Yeah, no doubt about the lake itself and Nugget Falls Trail. gets closed as soon as that gets up there about 7 feet, which is what we reached. So we did close the trail, but it was quite temporary. It receded quickly.
Got it.
Yeah.
So if people are wanting more information about the fees, and, you know, I'm so glad that you came on air to tell us about this, because I actually, you know, they are nominal in, I mean, in the grand scheme of I buy a latte, whatever. They're pretty nominal. If people want more information about the fees, how the fees are being used, and also to attend those public meetings, where can they go?
Well, first of all, they can email me if they'd like me to come and talk to their community group. I'd be very happy to do that, to explain further what our plans are to do with this money. And it's not just about paying the bills, although it is partly in paying the bills, but it's also about these ideas for expansion and for enhancements. So that's a complex picture, and I'm very happy to explain that.
That's great. And is there a website that people can go to get information as well about the glacier?
Yeah, so the Tongass National Forest website is a great source. There's also a Facebook page. The Tongass has its Facebook page, and it would be easily, you know, found if you're on that forum. Emailing me, jneary@fsfedus is fine too.
Great. John Neary, the director of Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, such a pleasure to talk with you today, and thank you for explaining things that people in our community have a lot of questions about.
Thanks very much, Hunter.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon here on KTOO 104.3. It's Thursday, June 4th. It's 23 minutes past the hour. My name is Shona Osterhout. Our second guest in the studio today is Beth Weigel, talking about all things Juno Public Library. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Shona.
Thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, this is great. Thanks.
So what's going on?
Well, it's a big time at the library right now. Of course, summer reading program is just underway. We just kicked that off, and so feel free to come in and sign your kids up for summer reading program. We've got games and all kinds of activities for the summer, so you can get your goodie bag and take it home and just start lounging around and reading.
I did summer reading programs when I was a kid. Did you?
I did, for sure. And you know what, Shona?
What?
You can still do it as an adult.
Is it part of the student one? Or?
No, we actually have a couple activities for adult summer reading as well. So
really?
We have, yeah, if you want to do your reading log, so we have some sheets that you can fill out. If you read 4 books over the summer, you'll be entered into a drawing at the end of the summer for a tablet and some gift certificates to different restaurants. So the adults can participate that way. Kids participate by also doing reading logs. They can fill out their reading logs, bring them in, and get free books. And then we have our reading reviews, so reviewing a book, writing a little something down about it that they thought was fascinating, drawing a picture. And then I review those and choose a couple from every library, and we get prizes handed out from all the businesses in town, and we've had some spectacular things coming into the library. The businesses in Juneau, of course, as you know, are super supportive of lots of community functions, and summer reading program is no exception. So Copa ice cream and, you know, tram passes and Bullwinkle's pizza and all kinds of great stuff. So we're excited.
So being an adult reader myself, what about something like I just put the Kindle app on my iPad. It's really changed my life, really.
Right? Yeah.
And that's legit?
That's legit. You can read it on your Kindle. You can listen to it. You don't even have to, like, you know, process words. You can just, like, listen to them.
Let's hope people listen and process as we are on public radio.
That's right.
Well, that's great news for kids and adults.
So summer reading is underway, and we're very excited because next week we have Kate DiCamillo, the National Ambassador for Young People's Literature, coming to town, and she's also the National Summer Reading Champion, so she's helping us kick off summer reading program. We've got her scheduled doing lots of events. She's going to actually come on June afternoon next week on Tuesday, and we'll hear a little bit of her message. But I do love that her focus is that stories connect us, and I think that that's a great message. And, you know, she really promotes reading together, so reading to your children or reading in classrooms and reading together the same book, not necessarily out loud, but like in book clubs and things like that. And that this idea of reading together, these stories connect us, it takes us out of our aloneness in the world and makes us feel like we're sharing things and ideas. And it's great. So I'm excited for her to be here next week. She's going to be here on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, and that's the 9th and 10th of June. We'll have different activities. Tuesday night, we'll have her at a family time out at the Valley, and she's also going to visit the rally program at the Riverbend School, and she's also going to be doing story time Wednesday morning next week. She'll be doing her ambassador speech Wednesday evening next week at the University Library, the Egan Library, at 7:30. So check out all of the things. She's making lots of appearances, and we're excited for that. She's also, of course, the author of children's books that a lot of people are familiar with, including Flora and Ulysses is her most recent book, won the Caldecott Medal. And she's also author of Because of Winn-Dixie and Tale of Despereaux, both of which were made into little movies. Mm-hmm, and so we're getting ready. So tomorrow, Friday, if you want to come out to the Valley at noon and get ready for her, we're going to talk about her different books. And if kids want to get questions ready for her, we can start thinking about questions we want to ask when she's here about the writing process and being an author and being the ambassador and all those things. So
that's very cool.
Yeah. So tomorrow noon at the Valley Library, we'll get ready and prepare our questions and talk about her books. And then she'll be here next week, Tuesday and Wednesday. And that'll be exciting. But also, more things about summer reading program. So our theme is every hero has a story. So we're really focused on superheroes and things like that this summer, and not just like the superheroes that we know in, you know, the Marvel comics or things like that, but our own local heroes like police officers and firemen and you know, theater actors. And
well, you know, I think of people like Nora Downhauer.
Exactly.
Came to mind. You
yeah,
know? Like
yeah.
Just, yeah.
So the museum is also doing a local heroes walking tour, and that'll be part of the programs this summer. We have the first one kicking off on Saturday, June 6th for that. Those you do need to sign up ahead of time. We're also doing a couple other hero movies throughout the summer. We're doing a variety of Science Fridays that are sort of like the science heroes, focusing on those in July. We're doing Books and Bullwinkles, so talking about books and eating Bullwinkle's pizza and thinking about our literary author heroes. And then our third Thursday this month, which will be on June 18th, is going to be great as well. We'll be having a special program for that. And so we've got a lot of great activities. Our toddler times and our story times are back in action. Of course, story time in the summer means story times plus crafts. So we have themes around the hero theme as well for each story time, and everybody can do a craft. So yesterday we did like our favorite hero dogs, and we had a fun craft with a coloring sheet and a dog, and thinking about all the things that dogs can do to help rescue people and help people who are vision impaired and things like that. So we've got lots of events for our summer reading program. And then, you know, of course, we're still working on our StoryCorps project, and we're all trained up and everybody's ready to go with that. So encouraging folks who are interested in talking about Alaska Native educational experiences and ways of knowing and ways of learning, come on in, and we'll sign you up for doing a StoryCorps interview, which is an oral history project that we'll be working on for the next 5 or 6 months.
Wow. Always a busy time at all the libraries.
It's a busy, fun time.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And summer reading program kicking off here. If people would like more information about all the things, the various calendar items, and making sure that they can get to all the fun things that are going on, where do they go?
Well, you can visit us at our webpage, which is juno.org/library, and we have a printed calendar you can pull off there. A lot of the events end up on the meeting room calendar as well, because we hold them in the meeting rooms. But you can also visit our Facebook page, Juno Public Libraries, and that is got lots of our information as well.
So can students or adults, depending, or adult students, get signed up for the summer reading program at any library?
At any one of our branches in the city. So the downtown library, which is above the parking garage over in Douglas, where the fire station is, and then out in the valley. For at least through August, we'll still be in the Mendenhall Mall, and then we'll be making the trek over across the way there to our new Diamond Park location, and sometime reopening in September or October. So lots of things happening with the library.
I don't know if people have checked out the new library out there. It's looking great.
Yes, and the exciting thing is, and you'll see pictures of this on our Facebook page too, is that if you bought a brick to support the funding for the library, and an engraved brick, then those just came in and they're out there sorting them. And so lots of pictures are coming in of as the bricks are getting organized and getting ready to be laid out there with the engraved names on them.
That is so cool.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Ms. Beth Weigel. Definitely check out all the upcoming things. So many goings on at the Juno Public Library. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 4th of June, 2015, anniversary of the day in 1919, when the 19th Amendment to the Constitution was passed by Congress, giving women the vote. Women voted in their first national election in November 1920. It's the anniversary of two crucial battles in World War II. 1940, the British evacuation from Dunkirk, and 1942, the Battle of Midway in the Pacific. Winston Churchill had sent British forces to Belgium to try to stop the advance of the Nazi invasion. The British were completely overwhelmed by the German army. They got bottled up in the little coastal town of Dunkirk. They had abandoned equipment on the way. Almost 500,000 men stranded on the beach. Nazi bombers began to attack from the air. And then Hitler gave a personal order to stop. The German commander knew that he could probably wipe out the British in a single battle and the war would be over, but one of Hitler's aides at the time wrote in his diary, "The Führer is terribly nervous, frightened by his own success," which gave the British time for an evacuation. They sent out a request for all persons with seaworthy vessels to help in the evacuation, and a great flotilla of fishing boats, lifeboats, paddle steamers, yachts came across the channel to save the British army. And when the soldiers arrived back in Britain, they were given a hero's welcome. Churchill decided to use the event to build British morale. One soldier said, "We might have been the heroes of some great victory instead of a beaten army returning home having lost most of its equipment." The Battle of Midway took place in the Central Pacific around Midway Island. Japanese Navy hoped to take control, use it to stage an invasion of Hawaii. But American bombers, which had wandered off course, accidentally found the Japanese fleet while most of the ships were refueling, attacked them. The Japanese never fully recovered, and they never won another decisive naval battle for the rest of the war. It's the birthday of Ruth Westheimer, born in Frankfurt, Germany, 1928, to Orthodox Jewish parents. When the Nazis came to power, the family decided to flee Germany, but the grandmother refused to go, so Ruth was sent to safety in Switzerland, and she never saw her family again. moved to Palestine, joined the underground movement fighting for a Jewish state, eventually moved to New York, got her degree, and started broadcasting a radio show called Sexually Speaking, which made her famous. Dr. Ruth, the sex expert. And it's the birthday of the horror writer Joe Hill, born in Herman, Maine, 1972, author of Heart-Shaped Box, Horns, and Nosferatu. He's the son of the novelist Stephen King, born Joseph Hillstrom King. Nosferatu features a vampire, but Hill says he's confused by the popularity of vampires. "I don't understand the romance of vampires," he said. "They're bloated leeches that live in dirt. That doesn't strike me as the height of eroticism." Here's a poem for today by Charles Bukowski, A Song with No End. When Whitman wrote, "I sing the body electric," I know what he meant, I know what he wanted, to be completely alive every moment in spite of the inevitable. We can't cheat death, but we can make it work so hard that when it does take us, it will have known a victory just as perfect as ours. Charles Bukowski's poem, A Song with No End, from The Night Torn with Mad Footsteps, published by Black Sparrow Press and used by permission here in the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Progressive Insurance, with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout. Today is Thursday, June 4th. It's 37 minutes past the hour. And my next guests on Juno Afternoon today are Colleen Goldrich, the owner of Annie Kales, as well as Rick Clare and Michael Hunter, here to talk about the First Friday exhibit at Annie Kales tomorrow. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Colleen, I would love to start with you, if you could tell me a little bit about, a lot, depending on how you have these fabulous artists, and if you could give them a little intro, that would be fabulous.
Sure. Well, let's see, I think it was in 2013 when I bought Annie Kales, I immediately contacted Rick and said, "Hey, Rick, how about doing a show?" And he was living up in Anchorage and working away. And to our good fortune, he retired recently and moved back to Juneau. And so it's worked out that that he could do a show. So Rick and Michael have been longtime friends, and they'll talk more about that. But it's worked out great that we can have both of them together again at Annie Kales for the first time in a long time. They'll be doing a show together.
And we'll get the details right now, if you don't mind, and
sure,
we can cover them later, too. But it's tomorrow?
It starts tomorrow. Tomorrow's the opening reception. It starts at 4:30, and we'll go till about 7:30, sometimes 8, somewhere in there. And we'll have our usual sort of First Friday snacks and things like that. But the main thing is the opening of the show and the first viewing of their new work.
And yeah. Will the show be up for a month?
A month. Yeah, great. It'll be up all month.
Great. So, Rick and Michael, thank you so much for coming in to talk with us today. It's just before we got on air, we've had quite the chuckle. I did, at least. Just about your collaborations in the past. And I was wondering if you could tell us how the two of you met as artists.
Sure. I was working at Rain Song Gallery when I first came to Alaska in 1993. And Rick was one of the artists that was carried there, his paintings, and he had an amazing small painting of a whale sitting in front of a house on the front lawn with a family just sort of looking. The kid was riding a bicycle or something in the background, and I loved this painting, and I was thinking of buying it, and it was $200 or $300 at the time, and someone bought it in front of me, and I was crestfallen, and we became great friends, and we've had several shows together in the past.
And what was your first introduction in the same day, I imagine?
Yeah, right around that same time. I think it was, Michael's Jewelry really kind of struck a chord with me. It, was unlike anything I'd seen around Juno or really anywhere. His use of just kind of natural materials and gold and you name it, lots of different types of things. And so I think it that sort of made me kind of want to get to know him a little better. And like he said, then we sort of began a collaboration, at least as far as shows go. I'm a painter. He is a goldsmith and jewelry maker. But we seem to hit it off and always have a lot of fun. And the times that we've had shows together, it's been a blast. So I'm really looking forward to doing it again tomorrow.
Well, it's really interesting because a lot of times when you see people doing shows together, artists doing shows together, maybe the mediums are a little bit similar, more similar. So how do you blend that with the shows you do?
Well, I've done pieces in the past where Rick has taken the objects that I've made and incorporated them into his paintings as part of the people in there. And then it even went so far as to a piece came back to a friend of ours, and he mounted it, the original earring that was painted on the figure, he mounted the actual earring that inspired it on the painting and then gave it to me. So I've got the thing hanging.
Michael has that, has it hanging in his house. And I was just over there a week or so ago and saw it for the first time. Gosh, that's what you were telling me about.
3D,
yeah. Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
The inspiration or the title of your show, the theme of your show, sounds like a movie, maybe? a second movie.
An X-rated movie, maybe.
Worn and Hung 2.
All right. And that, of course, means that there was a Worn and Hung 1.
Yes.
And I was wondering...
And, well, actually, the first time, as I recall, the Juno Empire was a bit hesitant to review it. Because they thought it might be obscene, but we pointed out that I was worn and Rick was hung.
And you're talking about the art.
The artwork, yes, most definitely.
So how do you define your art as worn then?
Well, generally, I mean, if you're a jeweler, you're stuck with basically the human body. And if you want to display it, it's either hung around the neck or, on the wrist or whatever, or rings, so it's worn.
Also, going into a little bit about just your own work, I've read that polished is not necessarily where you like to go either.
No,
so I was wondering if worn kind of has the double meaning.
Yes, it does, very much so. I like smooth surfaces. I like surfaces that show the hand of the artist, and I think high polish for me, if you wear a shiny brooch into a room, you end up with the reflections of the room rather than the metal. And I like the wear that it incurs over time.
And that's what it appealed to me about Michael's work, is the fact that a lot of it looks like it could have been just, excavated at a remote site someplace. It could be maybe, 2,000 years old or even older. I mean, it just has that kind of look and feel and texture.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it very unique.
And sometimes some of the pieces are very old in his work.
Oh, yes, very much so.
He mixes all sorts of material. It's pretty fascinating.
Rick, in terms of the work that you have going up tomorrow, do you think about worn and hung when you're painting these kinds of things, or is that something that kind of comes afterwards?
The hung relates to, it's flat art, they're paintings, they're hung on the wall.
Great function.
And it really goes no further than that.
Awesome.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm one of his great followers. I have probably 30 or 35 pieces, originals of his.
Yeah, I expect Michael and his wife to buy at least half of the pieces that I'm hanging tomorrow. So I'm joking. But they do have a number of pieces, and they've been really, really great as far as supporting what I do. And I'm not actually, actually not going to let them buy anything else of mine. If they like a piece, I will. I'll go ahead and do something for them, at no charge, because they have been so supportive in the past.
That's great. So, people tomorrow coming to look at your work, what can they expect to see?
Somebody told me that they thought a good way to describe my work was magical realism, but it's not that realistic. And I've been scrambling, trying to find a phrase or a term, and I came up with naive surrealism. And I looked that up online, and what I found was there actually was is that phrase, and it's been applied to bad movies.
Good.
Like stuff that was made by Ed Wood, for instance, that sort of have their own appeal, mm-hmm. but typically not very good. And I don't like to use that particular meaning in relationship to my work, because I don't think I do bad work.
No.
But it is, consider myself kind of a naive painter, because I don't have any schooling. I'm just self-taught.
Perceptive third grade art.
That's what I was going to say. Is it more of a childlike feeling?
His color freedom is remarkable. I mean, mm-hmm. you can do pink sky and you know, orange lawns and fluorescent cats.
It's I started painting kind of as a response to the Juneau weather 25 years ago, I guess. I was trying to figure out a way to bring color into my environment, into my life, and painting seemed to be a good way to do it.
He does an amazing job at it. The first painting I saw of Rick's was out at Lyle's when Michael was working there, and it was a woman in the kitchen, and she had a rainbow dress on, and the floor was made up of colorful fish swimming by. And I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. To this day, I'm kicking myself that I didn't buy that painting. It was so cool. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Well, it seems like you guys have a really great collaboration and a good time together. And that's always, I think, fun to see, especially going to shows, you know, because that definitely shows in the art itself.
We're definitely in it for the fun.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if somebody wants to buy something, that's fine too.
That's good too. Yeah. And do you all have individual websites or a place that people can see work, or is it Annie Kales is the place to go?
You know, I don't. Now that I'm retired and I have more time to do those kinds of things, I do want to put together a website. But mm-hmm. for right now, it's Colleen has some of my work on her on the Kales website.
That's great. So Worn and Hung 2. And that's happening tomorrow. The show opens tomorrow at Annie Kales and will be up for a month. Could you give us, Colleen, those dates and times one more time?
Sure. Tomorrow, which I believe is the 5th of June, starts at 4:30 till 7:30 or 8. And then it's up through the month. Actually, it'll probably be up until the 2nd of July. And we're located at 244 Front Street.
Super. Rick Clare, Michael Hunter, Colleen Goldrich, thank you so much for coming on air to talk about your opening tomorrow of Worn and Hung 2. I can't get the name out of my head. I'm just going to have to keep saying it over and over again. But thank you so much for coming on air, and have a great show tomorrow.
Great.
Thanks for having us.
Great.
The Juno Symphony and assistant conductor Dwayne Corbin invite you to join us as we present music from the classics to the world of fantasy. You'll hear themes from blockbuster movies like The Lord of the Rings and The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Plus, we'll feature our talented 2014 Youth Solo Competition winners. And we'll unveil our exciting new season, June 13th and 14th at JDHS. Tickets available at the Jack, Hearthside Books, and at the door. Sponsored by Alaska Airlines, UAS, and BP, with support from the Alaska State Council on the Arts. For more information, visit junosymphony.org.
Sponsorship comes from the Goldtown Theater, showing the silent 1926 animated, kid-friendly film, The Adventures of Prince Ahmed, with a live original soundtrack performed by Miles and Karina. Showtimes and tickets at goldtownnick.com or Rainy Retreat Books.
One Lutheran, one Jew, one hour went into hiatus when Rabbi Dov Gartenberg moved away. But the need for community space to safely engage questions of faith, belief, spirituality, and culture remains. Join me, Pastor Sue Belita, and Unitarian Universalist Pat McClear for what we're calling One Lutheran, UU, and You, Thursday, June 4th from 7 to 8 p.m. on KTOO News Juno. All who have ears, listen.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's real estate, home, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles on the unique lifestyle of Southeast, available online at seakliving.com.
Thanks for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, June 4th. It's 51 minutes past the hour. My name is Shona Osterhout, and I have some arts up. I have some awesome new guests for Arts Up. I'm very excited about that. Of course, Hillary is here again to talk about the calendar. Thanks so much for joining us. And then also we have Amanda Kraft and Chad Edwards. And Amanda owns Happy Camper, the new food truck that's hanging out by the Jack, if you've seen that. And Chad Edwards, who's the food truck that's been out there and been doing some awesome stuff. Thanks so much for joining us in the studio.
Thanks, Shona.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and start with Chad, if you don't mind. Just the Pucker Wilson's, every time I go by that place, it's the perfect amount of busy. You know, how awesome.
No, it's been good, and I'm really fortunate and happy that the community supported us so far. And we just try to keep things simple and delicious, and we try to get the food out quick, too. I think that's really important, especially for people that have a very limited time at lunch, you know. And but on those sunny days, it's great to see the people come down and relax a bit. We got some new tables, and we just want to make it as welcoming as possible being on the front lawn. But
for people who don't know what Pucker Wilson's is or what you serve, it's pretty delectable, and I was hoping you could kind of fill people in on that.
Sure. Well, like I said, we keep it simple. So it's, I mean, we're a burger truck, burger and fries, hand-cut fries. We cut all our potatoes fresh in the morning. All our meat comes from a local butcher. It's fresh ground chuck. They do it just the way I want it. It's not frozen. It's fresh product. We source everything fresh, and yeah, and it's simple. I mean, we don't load up a lot of different. We do specials with burgers with some fancy stuff on it, but our burger comes with just pickles, lettuce, our pucker sauce, and a toasted bun with just good, fresh, locally sourced meat. So,
you know, and it's amazing, and this Pucker Wilson sauce has really taken off too.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, right? Can you tell a little bit? I mean, I know you can't give away, like, secret ingredients and stuff, but I was wondering if you could say a little bit about what the Pucker Wilson sauce is and what's it taste like.
I just made a sauce that I like to have on a burger or fries. I mean, that's the only benchmark I could really set. It's like, this is what I like to eat, so I'm going to do it. So it's just, it's a little sweet, little bit of spice, a little bit of savory. Yeah, not too heavy.
Yeah.
Just the way I like it. And I'm glad it took, because it could have been... I mean, it's all subjective, right?
So, totally.
Yeah.
You have good taste buds, I guess.
Thanks.
And Amanda, if people have been down by the Jack, that's the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, there's a little cute green food truck down there, and it's called Happy Camper. So welcome to the neighborhood.
Thank you. I'm really excited to get the camper open.
Yeah. So when is it? Is it open for business? And what are you serving?
Yeah, so tomorrow night at Food Truck Friday, it will be open. I've been doing some events around town, but food will be coming out of the actual camper tomorrow night. I do vegetarian food, and the bulk of the menu is brown rice and black bean bowls with different homemade sauces and toppings and veggies and a lot of whole foods, really good, hearty, yummy stuff that keeps you full.
And, you know, I have been a vegetarian for 27 years, and I have to say, ain't many places like you in town.
I noticed that. So, yeah, it's the food is real fresh. It's great. You can also modify it. A lot of people are vegetarian in town. A lot of people have different dietary stuff. Maybe they're vegan. Maybe they're gluten-free. And the food that comes out of Happy Camper can accommodate all those diets, as well as anybody else who just wants to eat something different, try something new, have another option in town for lunch.
Yeah, and you know, I work in the arts, full disclaimer, I work in the arts in town, and kind of what sometimes people like to say, oh, well, the symphony is in competition with this other arts organization and this arts organization and whatever. But the kind of the thing that I think is really cool is that you all are starting actually a community, you know, a food truck community.
We're really excited about that.
Definitely excited.
So what does that mean for you all? And like how, because there's Food Truck Fridays now happening every Friday at the Jack.
Yeah, well, I think the food truck scene in a lot of other places is growing and really, really popular. And I think with Chad and I kind of being in our own little pod, a pod of two, things are going to really start happening and really just getting a lot of people down there trying new stuff and being part of the community. It's a community spot. The Jack is a community spot, and we're here to promote that community with some good food.
Exactly. I mean, it's a collective collaboration sort of thing. I mean, Amanda's doing one thing and I'm doing another thing, and I mean, we're both filling our own niche, so it's just going to bring more people down. And obviously it's not just about food either. There's a great music and local arts and crafts as well, so we're hoping that it's just going to help it become a bit of a cultural hub.
Yeah, it definitely has that vibe already.
Right on.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's what we're going for.
And Hillary, is there something that you want people to, if they're interested in bringing a food truck down, or if they're interested in selling their jewelry or their canned goods or whatever, is there a place where they can go to get signed up for Food Truck Friday?
Absolutely. You can sign up online at our website, which is jahc.org, or you can just call us at 586-2787. We welcome everybody. Come sell your food, your stuff. We also have an Artists at Work spot where you can just bring your stuff and work on it for free, let people see what you're working on. So that's really awesome. That's all going to be part of our Food Truck Fridays. Every Friday this summer, there's going to be food, music, and fun. It's going to be a really good time.
And what time does that start going? Like, Chad, because you all sell kind of all day anyway.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, I'll be there from 11. I'm there 11 to 6 Monday through Friday and 11 to 2 on Saturday. So my hours won't change. I will be open later for Food Truck Fridays, and I'll also be open later for any kind of event that the Jack is hosting. So,
and then once Happy Camper has got the grand debut on Friday, that's tomorrow, yeah? Will you be open for other hours too?
Yeah, so tomorrow I'll be opening at 4 for Food Truck Friday. I'm also doing an event on Saturday at Perseverance Theater for Perseverance Theater's end of season bash, which is going to be great. And then I'll be open starting June 16th for regular lunch service, Tuesday through Friday, 11 to 2.
Awesome. We have just a couple more, not very long at all. I was wondering if you could give us, Hillary, some highlights about things that are going on this weekend.
Sure thing. Just a couple highlights. Tonight at the Douglas Library, there's going to be the Douglas Mini Park Fruiting Forest Meeting, talking about what to do with that little tiny pocket park at the end of 4th Street. Maybe make a community garden out of it. So go check that out at the library. Tomorrow is First Friday, which is exciting. Doing lots of really cool stuff around town. The juried show at the Jack is going to happen at 4:30. Sue Ann Randall is the juror. That's always exciting. There's something for everyone. Of course, Food Truck Friday is happening officially at 5:30, but come by whenever and check it out. All kinds of good stuff, good food, good vendors. For the music, it's Alaska Pella, C. Scott Fry, and Thunder Mountain Big Band.
That's awesome. Well, people can check out the calendar at www.jahc.org. Thank you so much for coming on air today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shona.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast.